Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Every couple of weeks throughout the season, we get the umpire's perspective, a bit of clarity for us to deepen our understanding, to add to our debate, sometimes to calm our burning tensions, our raging opinions. We don't always like to hear the calm rationalisation of it all, but that's okay. It's important to live and learn. And Ray Chamberlain has taken that on for a few years for us, and he's back this season. Ray, welcome.
Great to be back, Jared. Thanks for having me.
Still an umpire. Well done.
Always an umpire. That's in the DNA.
Missed the start.
Well,
this was supposed to be your glorious return, having not umpired since round 9 last year.
Yeah, so it's 10 months. And there's been some trials and tribulations along the way, and we're ready to go. I was meant to be in my team up on the Gold Coast. So we had three debutants in round 1 for our list. And I had Andy Adair in my team from Queensland, and Andy got to debut in front of friends and family up on the Gold Coast. But I was at a function and fell a little ill on the Friday, and yeah, no one needed to see me at all for a few days, but we're back on deck training, and I'll get a crack this week. So another week won't hurt, Jared.
How disappointing.
Mum was filthy. Mum's a Swans supporter, and that's the game I was meant to have, and she's obviously tuned in. I just get this text message, which I won't relay verbatim, but it was essentially, "Where's my boy?" And I said, "Sorry, Mum, I'm crook." So she just said, "Hydrate and rest." Seemed reasonable.
So tell us about your team.
Yeah.
So it's substantial change in the way the game is umpired, but also the way that you're allocated.
Yeah, so there's been some discussion, obviously, that the AFL have seen fit to go to 4 field umpires on the ground. And I think, you know, it's been a very small sample size, so I don't want to get, you know, too deep into it. But at this point, what I think was most pleasing over the weekend was I didn't hear a lot about it, which I think was really great. And it was sort of where we kind of felt that it might land, and we can unpack that a bit more. But so there's 4 field umpires, and we've been in groups before for periods, you know, 2 or 3 rounds, 4 rounds. We've tried that before. But this year, it's really funny, obviously, how the season unfolds. So we had a practice match where we all umpired together, and we stay in our teams, form and injury pending, till the end of round 3. And then we go into this sort of weird time where I think there's something like, and I won't quite get this right, but it's like 33 games in 27 days or something like that. And you've got Gather Round, and there's Easter Monday, and there's Anzac Round, yep, and all of that. So I think what will happen is at the end of round 3, the coaches will have a look at those teams, reconfigure, rather than having 8-9 weeks with the one group, and we'll get another block with our teams again. But I missed round 1. I watched the game with my team, and we reviewed the game, and I'm looking forward to being welcomed back in to sort of play my part this weekend.
So who is your team? What sort of spread of experience is there?
Yeah, so we've got Brendan Hosking, who umpired. He had his first grand final in season 2022. He officiated in the grand final. So he's got the feathers out. He's the big dog. And then Eleni T, who you'd be familiar with, L's in our team, from South Australia. And then we have Andy Adair, who debuted, and Andy's been in the system now for some time, so he's you know, not totally green to it all. And then there's myself, who's I bring the Zimmer frame along, and we see how we go.
What's your philosophy on the 4 umpire setup and the likely benefits in theory and in the first set of practice?
Yeah, so I think there's some stuff that's been publicised or run up the flagpole as the justification and rationale, and ultimately what you're wanting to do with officiating in sport is to serve the game, because that's ultimately what it's all about. What would happen in a 3 umpire system, and we got to 3 because the 2 was insufficient head count, is you're under duress a lot, physical duress, in trying to then cognitively process what takes place in front of you. And you get one look at it in that amount of time, and are you in a comfortable decision-making position, or are you 65 metres away from a long kick up the line and you're trying to, was he held off the back of the marking contest? You haven't even seen the scan to pick those players up. So what the four does is it allows us to position ourselves, and I think, you know, of all people, Eddie Maguire used to say this, surely, Ray, you should just let the play come to you rather than chasing it like a sheepdog. So there's a more of that. So we should be more comfortable under less physical pressure, be in better positions to get better information, which will then hopefully allow us to be more composed and have better cognition, better decision making. There's some other stuff there. So, and it's again, we've been asked to sort of keep our powder dry to about round six when they've got a bit more data. But I think it'd be fair for me to say that we're covering less distance. And the gut run high speed stuff has dissipated. So that aligns with that more comfortable decision making, being in better position. I think areas that we've always been challenged on the ground in the three were, if you draw a line from the edge of each of the squares in kind of like a V to the boundary line, so one will go to about 40 metres inside 50 and one will go to about 10 metres outside 50, so that's 60 to 40 metre, and that's a wedge in the ground. In those areas, in the three umpire, we get butchered. So whether that be ball to boundary, in the back, holding the man, throw, or whether it be marking contest. So the ball's getting transitioned from D50, long up the line into that part of the ground. Being able to see what's going on, take all that in, is really challenging.
Yep.
It's so hard. And so having two umpires in the mid zone now means you don't have to cover the lot. And so I think we should officiate that better. And then, of course, the book ends with the big boppers at either end of the ground. What's happening there? Are they able to run and jump at the ball? Is the defender being illegally blocked and prevented from the opportunity of contesting? So we should, that's some of the stuff that we're being asked to be better at.
So that positioning deep,
yep.
Which so Gary was observing this morning that he thought even deep and even sort of right towards the boundary line, just give us a picture of where we might find an umpire now in regard to those key forward, key defender contests where we hadn't previously.
Yeah, so that if you have a little think of that 30 metres out from goal to the goal line, that's core business for end zone umpire now. Where we would work up and down the ground because of the condensed nature up and down with all the players, you'd be in an end zone and the ball would be down the other end and you could find yourself at the back edge of the square actually. So 60 metres out from goal at the other end, you could find yourself there because all the players had flooded back. We had such condensed player activity there that it just made no sense to stay all the way back at the other end of the ground.
Yep.
So then you were transitioning up and down the ground like a midfielder, where now that far end zone umpire will never leave the 50-metre arc, really. 99% of the time they won't move. And when the ball comes down, their core business is, again, the big boppers at the back end of the ground inside 30.
We didn't see a spike in free kick numbers?
No, which was nice.
Yep.
And look, I understand why people jump to the more officials on the ground equates to more free kick. And again, we've had one round only, so we'll let it play out. But again, how many free kicks will be registered by champion data today at the MCG? Well, there won't be any because there's no game. Right, so the point is you can only pay what actually happens on the ground. So the players are to be commended as well because I think that it's not just how many umpires and what umpires. There's lots of inputs. And player behaviour is the primary ingredient to that. So tick to them. The other thing that was an unintended consequence that I observed was just the communication on field. Like, because the umpires aren't physically under duress and you're not 60 metres away from something that you're trying to communicate and manage with, I just was less screaming and yelling and... It just seemed very composed, like I found with the way we communicated to player. So that wasn't an intended key outcome of this for umpire, but it was something that I observed from the couch. And I thought that was great. And I thought that added to what was happening on the ground and by extension, the broadcast, because, you know, obviously you've got these match comments, you hear everything, you know. So I thought that was great from our group too. I thought they did that really well.
Will the, so with the reduction in the high end running and potentially the ground covered, would that lend itself towards longevity?
Yeah, well, it's funny.
You're the right person to answer this.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be, if it was three umpire, I don't think I'd be umpiring this weekend. I think I would have more work to do. And that's not to say that I haven't done the work. It's just been different work. I've spoken to a couple of the umps who are in my demographic, and they're, you know, they're wrapped. And look, this isn't the intention of it, but I pulled out on Saturday night. I was meant to be Saturday night's game, and then they gave me to Saturday night for Sunday. And we had an umpire who's our oldest umpire on our list. He happens to be the reigning All-Australian. And he umpired Thursday night, and then he umpired on Sunday. And he was at the gym training the following day. So that's one example, and it's not again, the primary function of it, but it allowed an opportunity for that to happen.
Yeah, so not only the theory of being able to umpire two games in a weekend, but in round one it happened.
Yeah. Unintended, but we were able to activate that, where that would have been, that he wouldn't have been the guy that they would have had to call, I wouldn't have thought, historically.
Yep. And the last one in that is the sense of teamsmanship amongst the four, and we've sort of learnt to see it, is two umpires see something, one doesn't blow the whistle, one does, and the whoever blows the whistle is king in that moment, is how, so this is a very real part of your quartet. Not that it wasn't part of the three, but probably even more so with more eyes on the same contest.
Yeah. So I think, you know, there was a school of thought historically from some people in the game that, and I talk about our game, officiating, where I saw enough of that to know. And I never really subscribed to that. I'm a little bit more literal, and that's just the way I look at it. I think historically, if an umpire missed a free kick and the replay showed it and they're on the other side, the game, more broadly, fans, spectators, media, could say, well, how could that umpire see that from there, really? And so you could wear that. The ones I think we have real trouble with is when you tip into something and it isn't what you actually thought you saw. So it's an unwarranted intervention. So I think now, you know, given that you've got support either side of you on in any particular contest, if you don't see it, you know, you don't have to have any guesswork. You know, I think that's even more important now, that you hold back, because you have colleagues either side of you that will get a view, and if it is a warranted free kick, you would envisage that they'll hop in and pay it. So if you've got someone that runs by you or whatever the case may be at an inopportune time, don't panic. I think at the end of the day, as I said, right out of the gate, anything to do with officiating isn't about officiating, actually. It's about serving the game. And after round one and the practice games that we've had, I'm really positive about the direction that this is taking.
Ray Chamberlain is in the studio after our first weekend of footy. So we'll zero in on a couple of the specifics, which drew a lot of commentary, dissent, maybe a bit of insufficient intent, and a couple of other bits and pieces. Ray Chamberlain in the studio. Melbourne's weather, partly cloudy, a top of 23 for City Power, supplying power to homes in the CBD and inner suburbs. Do umpires get a shirt presentation or perhaps a whistle presentation in the rooms before debuting, Ray Chamberlain? 0433 98 11 16, 40 winks, temper, text. Is there any formality ahead of an umpire making his debut?
Absolutely there is. And it's you know, like for people who are involved in the game within the footy ecosystem, and your pathway is umpiring, to debut and obtain your heritage number and get your shirt is just like a player making their debut. And we had some shirt presentations within our training session and structure where some of the elders got to get 60 seconds and talk about the person. And then, of course, there's some other little things that we do just as a collective and within our teams, and whether that be a whistle engrave, whether that be out for a couple of sodas, whatever it might be, we try and make sure that we really take that lick of the ice cream, because there's no doubt, Jared, there'll be the odd boot up the butt.
Yep.
That'll follow. Yeah.
You've got to have the, you've got to have both going on. So a couple of the talking points. So dissent was a talking point, particularly out of the St Kilda Fremantle game when you have two in a row.
Yes.
So Callum Wilkie, for me, just forgot the absolute starting point. And the absolute starting point was Adam Tomlinson in preseason games, standing with an umpire, pointing at the scoreboard, blew in about the decision that had been made. And I felt like, so people who were surprised by that hadn't been paying attention. That was sort of ground zero.
Yeah. And again, you know, you're right. It's round one. Right. So there is, it's been 6 months, even for the players, where they haven't been in a frightful, fierce contest and they're fully invested emotionally and what have you. And so it's not about, you know, what Ray might think versus Eleni versus Simon or Brett in terms of was that dissent or did I take offence? That's kind of, we've watered that down a bit. But it's that demonstrative stuff that won't be accepted. And that's the poster child, the point at the scoreboard. And he had a couple of goes at it too, you know, two or three. To Cal's credit, if you watch it, the umpire pays 50, blows his whistle, heads off. And I think a colleague of Cal's might provide some restorative feedback. And Cal immediately puts his hand up to say, yep. And Cal, my experience with him, does exactly that. Owns it, gets on with it. Great dude. So I feel as though he wasn't surprised. So I'm not sure why anyone else would have been.
Was the Jack Steele one as the follow-up warranted?
It's not as egregious as Cal's, but it's the same thing. And so that's consistently applied, and that we would hope to see that in any instance where that takes place, that our umpire would pay a 50-metre penalty in that instance. We just don't want the players doing it. That's what the game's asking us to implement.
Yeah, so it's not the umpire being precious.
Not at all.
That's one of the cues. Don't stand there and point at the scoreboard.
Direct instruction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The insufficient intent.
Yeah.
There's one which Ross raised with when you came in, which has been humming around in St Kilda circles. So second quarter, Hunter Clark knocks the ball away from Michael Frederick's hands out over the boundary line. It's not a marking contest. It's a ground ball, but it is a spoil.
Yep.
What are Clark's do's and don'ts in that? And was that was paid as insufficient intent? Is that how we would understand it?
Yeah. So that from what we're being asked to do is a correct implementation of the law. In a marking contest, a player is allowed to spoil the ball and defend and punch it 20 rows deep. That's fine. And that's the direction the game's given their officials. In general play, and that's the example that we're referencing here, of course Hunter Clark is permitted to contest the football. You're allowed to do that in this game. It's admired, right? But it's a clear, forceful, egregious spoil to do nothing other than kill the ball. So he doesn't try and knock it away from his opponent and gain possession. He doesn't try and keep the ball in play. He's just killing it out of bounds. We stop. It's a throw in. The ball's not in play. The game's asking the players to keep it in. We saw some footage out of a game, just as an example of where we did a really good job because we did nothing, right? And the ball was hummed up against the boundary line. It was West Coast and North Melbourne as a contested scenario and on half forward near the interchange. And the ball parried along the boundary line, and there were four or five times where 3 years ago, players just run it out of bounds. Not a question at all. But by direct nature of the laws of the game, they attempted to keep the ball in. They did keep the ball in. It then bounced back and forth and ended up with a contested mark inside 50 and a shot on goal. And whilst you could argue there are lots of inputs, one of the direct ingredients to that is the laws of the game saying, play the game and keep it in. And that's what people want to see. They want to see the ball going up and down the ground. You want to go on that. You go watch the Rebels play and admire the line out work if you like the ball out of bounds.
Yes.
Yeah? So that's the purpose of the law.
So if it's a marking contest, put it into the second tier.
Fine.
If it's a ground ball.
In general
play.
If
you put it in the sixth row, you're going to get knocked off.
Correct.
For it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Where else did you want to play from the weekend? Your eye was drawn to a couple of moments in Richmond and Carlton.
Yeah, so I was fit and healthy at that stage.
Yes.
I hadn't come down with anything, and I loved it. First game back and all of those things. And I just saw these little moments that just jumped out at me, and I just thought were really important. And I just learned stuff about how effort matters. And then it was affirmed by the coaches as well. And they were talking about similar data, similar statistics, but they framed it in different ways that suited what they were trying to do. And I just loved it, like this positivity and seeing where the growth had occurred. And it reflects also on what we're doing as a list and our umpires. And there was one moment right on quarter time, and, you know, it wasn't to the level that we saw last year where a player defended a ball and right on the goal line and kept it in. But Adam Chera stopped the ball from going through for a point at quarter time. And then if you look, there's a quarter, I think it's the third quarter, and the ball gets rushed through by a defender. So ball gets kicked, siren sounds, ball in transit, and a defender punches it through. So a score counts there. It's assisted through by a defender.
Yep.
If an attacking player had assisted it through,
yep,
no score. And our umpires were across that. They were right on it. You can hear the comms going, defender, defender. So score counted. Now, we fast forward to the end of the game. It's a draw.
Yes.
So these things really matter. And so it showed great connection with our umpires. It showed good teamsmanship to get the right result. And then I heard post-match, I always like to listen to the coaches and try and hear what they're saying because they're the smartest people in this game, right? And Damien Hardwick talked about Richmond and getting a bit of a Richmond-style game, and they were rapt about the 37 forward half turnovers and re-entries. And he lauded that. He's like, we take that. That shows effort, energy, Richmond way. We like that. And then he referenced something that potentially isn't historically there. One would, he referenced stoppage clearance. Because, you know, we play these guys and we tend to get a bit of a pantsing in that area, and that wasn't the case tonight. And that shows some growth, and we're really pleased with that. And then Vossi comes in and he does his post-match. And he references the 37 intercept, forward half intercepts from Richmond and it coming in, but he framed it in a different way. He said, you know, last year, if we conceded 37 of those forward half turnovers and the ball come back in, we lose that game by 6 goals. So look at our growth here in yep. this area, right? So what they were able to do is they were able to take the same statistic and the same thing, but frame it, hey, this is how this is shows some positive stuff. In what we're doing, in what we do in umpiring, we always defer to 96% of the positive stuff that we do. And we just walk by it. And then we over-index the negativity. Oh, you missed this bounce, or gee whiz, you didn't really communicate effectively there. We over-index the negativity there. And so I just found that communication piece on that rush behind by a defender, ball in flight, point, yep, that counts. And now we've got a draw at the end. We won't get championed by the industry in terms of that, but we got that right through great collaboration, effort and buy-in. And I loved it.
Yep. Yep. All right. As we leave, so a bit more around the insufficient intent, the kicks which slew and curl, I reckon this is worthy of a refresher
as well. Yeah, great.
It's not the ball that goes straight to the boundary, which is really easy to pick.
Yes.
It's the ones that take the territory and then roll away.
Yeah, great. If you use this as your framework, you'll get real close to nailing what we're supposed to be doing or being asked to do. When the ball goes, say, if you consider a line from the middle of one end of the goals all the way down the field to the other, we call that the major axis, okay? And it divides the ground in half, yeah, longitudinally. If the ball starts closer to there, that major axis,
yep.
and heads towards the boundary line from the disposal, you are in danger. Yeah? And then there's all these other things. Is there a player in the vicinity where they're trying to pass it to the team? Or is it just a hat kick out, gain territory, which in the 80s was fine,
yep.
but it isn't today.
The hat kick doesn't insulate you from the insufficient intent.
Absolutely not. The challenge one for us is because it's an oval, right? Is when you start towards the boundary line and there's the hat kick up the line, well, if it goes far enough, Jared, at some point it will go out of bounds.
Yes, yep.
Right?
Yep.
So that would not be necessarily an example of insufficient intent to keep the ball in play. You don't have to kick it back into the corridor to avoid a free kick,
yep.
right? But if you start closer to that major axis and your disposal heads towards the boundary line, we're processing it.
Yep.
Where are we going here? So that's probably your guide.
Cool. Good to see you.
Great to be back, mate.
See you out there in round two.
Fingers crossed.
Ray Chamberlain will join us every couple of weeks to talk umpiring.